Man, we have a lot of texts from folks needing help from the DMV. The Secretary of State's office, we'll try to get Henry back on with us again. Super helpful to have him, and like I say, we appreciate him. We'll try to get to more of those another time, but right now we have other stuff to get to. David Hochberg, last week you helped us raise our credit scores, and you know, you actually changed my behavior. On Friday, which I usually reserve for fun things after work, I made a payment on my credit card on a Friday when it wasn't even due.
How'd it feel?
So there. Well, I'm gonna wait. I'm gonna wait to see what the results are, and then see what goes on here with the credit score.
I'm telling you, you will see your mailbox explode with credit card offers.
Oh well, that's not good. I don't need any more credit.
I know, but it's good. It's good you're getting into a habit. That's good. Hopefully, other listeners are getting into the same habit. I received a lot of emails from your listeners saying thanking me for that little tip that will help our listeners improve their credit scores tremendously just by paying their credit cards off. Once a week.
Yeah, I know. It's a simple stuff, and they're little tricks, and I would never have known that had you not talked about that, because you just think as long as I pay it when it's due, everything's fine. And you said, no, it actually helps.
Yeah.
It actually helps. Makes a difference. Now, today, you've got some other stuff to talk to us about. You know, we were talking, texting each other over the weekend a little bit. I saw in Cranes how second homes are now such a big thing. We've talked about the home sales in the city and suburbs and the surge there. Now, second homes as well, southern Wisconsin, Michiana, all along the lake and those different harbor communities and things like that. Just a ginormous surge in people trying to get second homes, spending a lot of time there, maybe looking toward the summer. And what can you tell us about that when it comes to getting a mortgage and that sort of thing? Oh, here's the stat I was looking for. Demand for second homes up 128% from this same time last year, David Hochberg.
Well, if you think about it, this time last year, we were all locked down in our basements, not knowing if we were going to live or die, right? I mean, we were in the throes of the unknown. And, I would come down here on Saturdays to do the show and make it down from Northbrook in 26 minutes, which is great, but it's horrible because there's nobody out, right? There's no traffic in the morning. It's typically a 30-35 minute trip, but you know, it was like the Autobahn. Nobody was out. So what our listeners are experience is they want that outdoor space. They want to be able to go to a lake, get in a boat, enjoy themselves, and not be cooped up in a house. The other thing that they're experiencing is that they can work anywhere now. Okay, they don't need, if you work downtown Chicago, and you live downtown Chicago or lived in one of the suburbs close by because you could get on a metro and come downtown or drive downtown quickly, you don't have to be located that close to downtown anymore. You could work basically anywhere. And if you could work on a lake and take a boat ride at lunch on your boat or just sit out by your dock and do some work or go on your pontoon boat and get your work done, hell, why not? Okay, and that's what a lot of listeners who have been cooped up are taken advantage of. The only challenge is that at the end of the Trump administration, Mnuchin and the Treasury Department threw the Fannie Freddie a curveball and basically told all the servicers they could only have 7% of their portfolios held as second homes and investment properties. That basically put a major, major curveball into the pricing of the interest rates of second homes and non-owner occupied properties. Back in the day, 4 months ago, if you wanted to get a mortgage on a second home, it was the same rate essentially as you were doing your primary residence. Now, a couple lenders are over that 7% and have completely priced themselves out of the market, which is causing rates to go up and options for borrowers to decrease. So it's going to cost you a little more money on the financing side with the interest rates if you're going to try to finance that second home or non-owner occupied property.
So let me get this straight. What would my rate be for someone with decent credit, good credit on a second home? If they said, hey, you know what? I finally found this condo I love in Harbortown. What would it be?
Well, it depends. You got a couple lenders who are at 5.5% right now because they don't want any of those loans because their portfolio is completely out of whack. Right, they can't have more than 7% of their overall portfolio, according to the new Fannie Mae Freddie Mac rules that was passed the final days of the Trump administration by the Mnuchin Treasury Department. They came up with this rule, and now it's in play. You've got some lenders right now, some servicers who are over that 7%, so they have completely priced themselves out. They're at 5.5-6% because they don't want those loans. Other lenders are in the high threes, low fours, mid fours. So when you're pricing out and shopping for a secondary home or a non-owner occupied property, you need to do your homework, listeners, because the rates are all over the board right now.
What would be the positive in putting that rule into place? I'm trying to understand that.
It's what's the positive? I got to be careful because I'm on the radio and I can't say what I want to say. It reduces the overall risk of the overall portfolio that the lenders are holding. Okay, which I think is a bunch of garbage because the secondary homes, okay, are performing. I could see them doing something with non-owner occupied properties, right? Investment properties are higher risk, you know, because it's not your home. Somebody else is living there. You're renting it out. But to do that with second homes as well, you know, they're just trying to reduce the risks of default and have a stronger portfolio going forward. That's the reason they're doing it. Okay, it's just wrong because there's nothing wrong with those portfolios right now. They're performing and everything's fine, and then they throw this curveball in there right now, and it just messes up all the rates.
You know, I saw some interesting stuff, and you'll know about this. I was reading over the weekend about how 2008, that bubble, there's nothing about the surge in housing that really is a parallel to that. They're totally and completely different, because some folks say, hey, all these people buying houses, how is this possible? All these people buying second houses, how is this possible? Tell us how this is different from what you're seeing, David.
It's fundamentally different because the strength of the banking industry has been reinforced due to all the holes that were found in 07, 08 through 12. Basically, it was a four-year disaster for everybody that remembers that. It was a horrible experience in the entire banking industry. Rates dropped, values dropped, people lost their homes. But what did we learn? Okay, the banks are more heavily fortified right now. The no-docs or low-doc loans where you needed a pulse to get a loan are much tougher to get. Okay, now you have to be self-employed. You have to be self-employed for 2 years. You have to show 2 years of bank statements at a 70% ratio of what you're putting through. So the loans that are going through are much, much tighter. The borrowers and the safeguards that lenders and brokers like myself have to go through in order to qualify borrowers are much more stringent today than they were in 07 and 08, right? We're pulling tax transcripts from the IRS. We're doing name variances to make sure you are who you are. We're putting you through databases and other databases and other databases to make sure you're not a straw buyer and then getting on a plane and hopping to a foreign country where you're going to disappear into the Ethernet there after you do a cash out refinance of $250,000 and you get your wire and nobody knows where you're at. So the fundamentals between 2008 through 2012 and 2021 are completely different. One of the major things we learned was not to kick people out of your home. And when we have a crisis, throw the F word out there, throw forbearance out there at the beginning. That is what they did last March. That is what we learned with the debacle of having people line up around gymnasiums with 2 years worth of tax returns and sit in a hot gymnasium and then they keep losing your information and then sending it again and losing it and losing and losing it. That's what we learned. Throwing people out of their home and foreclosing immediately is not a good thing for the homeowner. It's not a good thing for the economy. It's not a good thing for communities. Because if you throw people out of their homes, guess what? They're not running down to the corner grocery store to buy their groceries. You know, they're not dropping their clothes off at the dry cleaner, and they're not stopping, to pick up some deli or pick up some snacks for the kids at the baseball league. Everything shut down in 08 through 2012, and it took a long time to get back up and running. So those are the changes that we've learned as an industry between the debacle of 08 and what we just went through, the gut shot that we had in March of last year, which we're still slowly crawling out of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an important distinction to make, and I think it makes you feel better because when you see the numbers, David, we talk about this a lot. It's a little crazy. I mean, you see multiple offers now. You see homes going and moving in one day in our area. Yeah, I mean, look, I just mentioned the second home market up 130%, primary homes up 34% year to year. It's a pretty active market, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, I would call it an efficient market, right? Because you have more people that are looking to buy homes than you have to sell homes. Don't forget, we went through like a 5-year period of time, 6-year period of time between 07 and 2012, 08 and 2013, that nothing got built in any major quantity. Nothing got built. So, and then you couple that with what we just went through, and the millennials now, who used to like to bounce around to different areas of the town, and I'm going to go Bucktown now, I'm going to go to Wicker Park, oh, I'm going to go over here and live there, and I want to check out these different areas of the city, are now getting into home ownership a lot younger than they did a couple of years back. So now there's that pressure on the first-time home buyers and on the inventory that wasn't there 10 years ago when we had the downturn. So a lot of different, and then you've got the record low rates to bet. You know, on top of that, to bat, to boot, you know, add all that stuff up, an increased supply. You can work anywhere you want now. You don't have to schlep downtown or schlep into an office. So a lot of our listeners are doing what? Putting a ton more money into their home, converting that third bedroom or second bedroom into an office, moving into a four-bedroom home instead of a three-bedroom home because that fourth bedroom is going to be an office. A lot of our listeners are putting in workout rooms and mini gyms because they learned, hey, if we have another lockdown, I got to work out. I don't want to gain the COVID-20. And our homes are becoming more valuable of an asset because of what we just experienced in the past 12 months. I'm looking outside of the studio right now. There are 12 apartments that are empty that when I broadcast from Studio D about 6 months ago, were all filled. What does that tell you? That tells you that when the leases came due, those renters said, I'm out of here. And there's nobody in those apartments right now. That's what's happening. So when you have the migration out and the push to buy, who's going to take the yin to that yang? Okay, the rental market's getting crushed right now because everybody's moving out of high-rise rentals or low-rise rentals, just rentals into general, and getting into home ownership. You can get a great, great, great opportunity to sign leases in the city right now if you want to lease a place. A couple of my buddies leased are still leasing downtown. It's down 30-40% from what it was last year. So there are winners and there are losers, and the losers right now is the rental market. The leasing market is taking the brunt of this home ownership push.
I guess it's good if you want to rent. I mean, it's nice to know the prices have come down a bit and you got some negotiation room too, so that's good to know. Hey, we have to pause for a second, then we can come back. If you got questions for David, 312-981-7200. We want to talk about some other stuff too. We got to get to. But hey, have you heard about this whole idea? We've been talking about this on the show, that furniture and big ticket items for the home, I know it's not your core area, but that they're difficult on delivery time. Sometimes it's 12 weeks, 14 weeks. I tried to order a sofa. They say September 4th is my delivery date.
I'm living it.
It's crazy.
My wife bought a couch on Black Friday after Thanksgiving. It just got delivered a week and a half ago.
Oh,
a week and a half ago.
Oh, my God.
She went out and bought a table. I got the table. Great. Okay, it was in stock. I got to wait till flipping September to get the chairs. I got fold-out chairs. It's crazy right now what's going on with the supply chain shortage. It's nuts.
Yeah, I Googled it. Washington Post has an article. Across the country, furniture retailers reporting months-long delays in every single step of the supply chain, from overwhelmed flat factories to clogged ports, surging demand for desks, chairs, and sofas. There you go.
Truckers. You need truckers to haul
truckers
this stuff
too.
From the ports to the facilities. Okay, there's a shortage all the way around of workers, materials. You can't get the containers up to Chicago to bring it to the stores to disperse it from the stores. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't want to wait till September because I actually feel it might be December. If I you know, press go and I pay for it, then I might not get it until who knows, next Black Friday. I have no idea. We have more to talk to David Hochberg about than just sofa deliveries. We'll pick it up on the other side of this. 312-981-7200. That's our number. David Hochberg is here with us answering some money questions here on Money Mondays. My Fridays have turned into Fiscal Fridays now, thanks to you, David.
You're welcome.
It used to be Fun Friday. Now it's Fiscal Friday. I'm like, David Hochberg says I need to go pay all my credit cards every Friday.
Well, you can
make a payment.
You can have fun after you take care of the fiscal part. There's nothing wrong with having fun.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I know. It's just another complication. But I will be very happy when I get the results, I think. I'm going to check back with you in about a month and two and let you know. How long would it be till I'll notice a difference?
About 30 days. It takes about 30 days to cycle out. So in about 3 more weeks, you'll see a major dramatic jump in your credit scores.
I cannot wait. This will be very exciting.
Yeah,
all right. And then I can buy a couch, maybe, if I can get one delivered in 6 months. Let's go to the phones. And John's on the line. Go ahead. You got a question for David Hochberg, John?
Yes, David. How you doing?
Hey, bud.
Tell you what, I love listening to you. The first time I've talked to you. Here's my situation. I had a death in the family, and I am part beneficiary of four houses, three of which I want nothing to do with. The fourth one might be a little bit out of my reach as far as what I qualify for in this beneficiary. To make matters worse, I am in between jobs thanks to COVID. I want to know, what are my options are as far as maybe taking out a 20 or 30% mortgage on a rather valuable house, even in my situation, in order to be able to buy this out of the estate.
Okay, so how many other people do you have to take care of that are part of the estate? What share is yours, and how much do they get? Like, you know what I'm saying? Are there three or four people, five people, 10 people? How many people do you have to cut up?
So I get 50% of the estate. The one house I want is worth probably 52% of the estate.
Okay, so here's what you do. You sell off the other three properties, right?
Which we're doing.
Okay, and then what you do is after you figure out, so since it's part of the estate, you could take out a mortgage against that property and pay off your other heirs, okay, however many they are, okay?
Uh-huh.
So here, let's just keep it simple, stupid, and make believe that there's no other properties. The other three properties are gone, okay, and you've got 50% of a $500,000 home, right? Or how much is the home?
The home is appraised at $1 million, and it's questionable, depending on how much the three properties sell for, whether or not million is going to be below half or above half.
All right, whatever it is. You got $1 million home, and you've got to take, and you're going to be 50% owner in this example, okay? So you have to take out a $500,000 mortgage. I'm just going to do it as simple as possible. $1 million home, you own 50%. Mm-hmm. You need a $500,000 loan to take care of however many people are left, correct? All right?
And no, Actually, no. The other three houses, they get the profit off of. I'm going to be left with this house, but I might come up about $100,000 short of the value of this house compared to half the estate.
No problem. So it's very simple. You get rid of the other three houses, you pay them off, right? You got to pull out 100 G's in order to top off the settlement of the other heirs. So you just pull out a $100,000 mortgage out of this $1 million property, which any experienced loan officer, even an inexperienced loan officer, should be able to pull this off as long as you have good credit and you have a job. The job's going to be the big thing. Are you of retirement age?
Actually, I just did pull my retirement. That's my problem. I haven't started getting the pension yet, but I no longer have a paycheck.
Okay, but you have a pension coming, correct?
I do have a pension coming.
Okay, well, we could count the pension. We need a pension letter and show that the money's hitting your account. Then you could count the pension. How much is your pension? 4, 5, 6, 10 grand? What are you getting?
65% of 100 grand.
So 65 G's. Okay, so there's $5,000 a month. It's $5,300 a month. Okay, is this going to be your primary residence?
Yeah.
Okay, do you have any other debt?
Yes.
Okay, how much other debt do you have?
Not a lot, only about $30,000.
Okay.
Wait, John, can we do something with the, can you reconnect you and David off air? Because it seems like we're getting very specific on everything. And then I think that
because this is getting complicated.
It's getting complicated. I don't know if it's complicated. David can figure it out,
we'll
for sure.
Out.
I just want to try to get another caller or two in, and I think you guys can get specific with your details. Is that cool?
Absolutely.
Thanks, John. Enjoy your day. Actually, there's a text here about how David has helped me. I just wanted to say thank you. Let's go to Cheryl. Cheryl, go ahead. You're on WGN with David Hochberg and Anna DeBlantis.
Hi, David. I have a question. I'm in the middle of trying to refinance the house. The appraiser came out. I'm in a four-bedroom house, and he decided it's a three-bedroom house.
Eesh.
Because I converted one room. I took the carpet out and put linoleum in so I could do stained glass in the room.
Yeah.
But he says it's not a bedroom, and his decision is final. What can I do now?
Yeah. Are there closets in the room?
Yes, there is. There's a closet, window, and door in the room.
Okay, how big is the room?
About
10 by 10, 10 by 12?
My husband measured out. I think it's 7.5 by 12.
Okay, so you have a small bedroom there, about 100 square feet. Here's what you need to do. You need to go back to your lender, whoever it is, broker, bank, and request that they go back to the appraiser and appeal the appraiser's decision. Okay, that if it has a door and it has closets and it's that size, is it above ground? It's not in a basement, correct?
Correct. I'm in a ranch.
Okay, then it should be counted as a bedroom. Okay, so I would go back. I go back to the bank, the loan originator that you're working with, and have them file an appeal with the appraisal management company. The appraisal management company will go back to the appraiser and fight that for you.
Okay, because I had him come out and to measure the room.
Yeah.
And he told me he was redoing it. That's been 12 days ago. It's with your company, and so far, I know Ron told me that I would have to have, he would have to request a formal one.
Yes.
And I've called the appraiser twice, and he has not responded back to me.
Well, now that I know about it, you'll have action first thing when I get back.
David, get on that, okay?
Done.
Come on.
Yeah. Sure. as if I know all the people that are upset about appraisal. Cheryl, the next time, instead of waiting there 12 days, just give me a call, and I'll get on it. So we'll put in a formal appeal, and we'll make sure that it gets looked at and have an answer for you.
All right, I got to run, Cheryl, but David will help you out, okay? Thank you. And thank you, David, too. You do help a lot of folks out. It's good talking with you. You got a lot of knowledge in that brain of yours. It's just a lot to share.
Thank you very much for having me and giving me the chance to share it with your listeners. I appreciate it.
Always appreciate you, David. Have a good one, okay? We'll talk later.
Bye-bye.